Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review for April 4th, 2016. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Healing and Revealing, Bodybuilder Gets Others Back on Their Feet. This is an article by Tony Reed from Decatur. Autumn Swanson gets to meet a lot of people she admires, from Hollywood's Terminator and Governator himself, Arnold Schwarzenegger, to Donald Ray Cox of Mount Zion. Both men show the extraordinarily contrasting sides of Swanson's muscular life, but she says she respects them both for the same reasons. I admire people who don't give up, who work hard. That is the determining factor for success. Let's begin with Schwarzenegger, one of the greatest bodybuilders of all time, turned actor and politician. He was on hand to crown Swanson the queen of Women's Physique International at his namesake, the Arnold Sports Festival and Arnold Fitness Expo, held March 3rd to 6th in Columbus, Ohio. Swanson, who lives in Decatur, had just aced 50 rivals in the female body sculpting competition, in which women are judged on a quest for perfection in their highly muscular bodies. Standing on stage in a bikini to collect her trophy and a $5,000 prize, about the only muscles that suddenly weren't working well for Swanson were the ones controlling her speech. Exhausted and a little tongue-tied, she found it hard to form words. Arnold said to me, "What's the matter? Are your teeth falling out?" She recalls with an embarrassed smile. It was a funny little interview up there on that stage. Swanson, who turned professional in 2010, is a lot more relaxed in her day job as a rehab care physical therapist at Hickory Point Christian Village in Forsyth. There we found her busy, stretching the legs of Donald Ray Cox, 83, who is keenly interested in rebuilding his body to the point where he can get around again after falling on New Year's Eve and shattering a hip. Swanson calls him All the Way Ray because the feisty retired cement mason lays the effort on thick during their therapy sessions as he steadily gains the strength to go home again. "She encourages me," Cox says. "She knows how to motivate." Watching her husband work with a sculpted therapist with a strong Kentucky accent who issues firm instructions punctuated with smiles and jokes, Verna Cox says Swanson is much in demand. "Everybody wants to work with her," she adds. "She's very good, and she knows what muscles to pinpoint and work on. We all know what she does in her spare time, which is unusual, but she really enjoys it, and she's really good at it. She cares about everything she does, and she cares about her patients here." Swanson says Cox never keeps track of how many repetitions he does of a particular exercise, and that makes him a man after her own heart. "He never counts, and I don't either," she says. "I go to the gym, and I keep going on an exercise until I literally can't do any more. And then I try to get two more. I count those two." Her success in the Arnold Expo gives her status as the number two female competitor in the world, but a relentless pursuit of perfection means she's already flexing her muscles at the number one slot. Her chance at that will come in September when she heads for the invitation-only 2016 Olympia Women's Physique Showdown in Las Vegas. Swanson finished fifth in this event in 2015 and is busy giving herself some intensive physical therapy as she prepares for another crack at it. "I've definitely got my work cut out for me," she says with a smile for Cox as his leg exercises keep going. "But it'll be the epitome to get that one." And yet, whether she grabs the world's number one spot or not, Swanson says she's a winner all the time because of the feeling of health and power she gets from bodybuilding. Her day job seasons all that with a profound dose of humility, too, as she works with those who would be eternally grateful just to get the strength back to pick themselves up when they fall down. My job keeps me grounded, she says. I know I am just blessed every day to be able to do what I do. Also from the front page, CAT sales prospects stay dim. First quarter estimates lag Wall Street gauge. This is an article by Tony Reed from Decatur. The only good news about Caterpillar Inc. mining truck sales in 2016 is that the bad news doesn't mean as much as it used to. Caterpillar, which builds its biggest dump trucks in Decatur, outlined the tough economic road it was facing to an industry analysts' conference in London recently. The company also prepared its audience for tough first quarter results, which are due to be announced April 22nd. Mike DeWalt, vice president in charge of financial services, set the scene by using 2012 as a yardstick. This was the golden period for sales in its Resource Industries division, which includes the big trucks sold to mining operations, and sales that year hit a record $20 billion. Resource Industries sales are now expected to be off anywhere from 15 to 20% in 2016 compared to 2015. But DeWalt said the decline involves proportionally much smaller numbers today. Overall sales for the division this year are pegged to hit only around $7 billion. So 15% to 20% in that segment, certainly dollar-wise, isn't what it used to be just because of what has already happened in the segment, DeWalt said. The relative scale of the downside is pretty limited just because we're not selling that much today. Quantifying the numbers in terms of vehicles, DeWalt told the Bank of America Merrill Lynch Global Industrials Conference that some 1,600 new large mining trucks, weighing in at 150 tons and above, had been shipped in 2012. In 2016, I think we will be lucky if we do 150, DeWalt said. So there has been a massive decline in that business, and that is fairly representative of the other products in mining as well. Caterpillar, which doesn't normally issue quarter guidance, decided to break precedent and clarify the situation with its own projections this time. The London conference was told to expect first quarter 2016 sales and revenues between $9.3 billion and $9.4 billion. Or between 65 and 70 cents a share before restructuring costs mainly linked to job cuts. Wall Street had been expecting $10.4 billion and 97 cents a share. Caterpillar, however, stuck with its full year guidance, which projects revenues in a range of $40 billion to $44 billion and earnings per share of maybe $4 before layoffs and other restructuring costs. DeWalt said the company can do little about a world market where many countries' economies are stuck in neutral or low gear. And so, he said, Caterpillar concentrates on what it can manage, which is cutting costs while also sinking cash into research and development to create superior products. And I think we've done a pretty good job, he added. A photograph accompanying the article is a picture of Caterpillar facilities with the headline, Caterpillar Inc. announced Friday that 150 employees in full-time production roles at its facility in Decatur will be placed on indefinite layoff. And also on the front page, an article from the National News, Bypass Surgery Medicine Combo May Work Best. This is the AP medical writer. Heart failure patients with clogged arteries have a better chance of surviving 10 years if they get bypass surgery plus medicine rather than just drugs alone, according to an international study. Earlier results from the same research raised questions about the benefits of bypass versus medicine alone, but researchers say the long-term evidence clearly favors the surgery. The lead author of the study, Duke University cardiologist Dr. Eric Velasquez, said the results are so definitive and so robust that they would likely lead to stronger recommendations favoring bypass surgery for these patients. Nearly 6 million Americans and 23 million people worldwide have heart failure, and many of them also have artery disease similar to those studied. In recent years, bypass surgery has increasingly been recommended for such patients, along with medicines to ease heart failure symptoms. Concerns were raised when results after nearly 5 years of research showed about equal number of deaths in bypass patients and in those who got only medicine, despite fewer heart-related deaths in the bypass group. Those findings were published in 2011. The 10-year results were published online Sunday in the New England Journal of Medicine and presented at an American College of Cardiology meeting in Chicago. The study involved 1,200 heart failure patients in 22 countries, including the United States. Most were men about age 60 when the study began. All were taking heart medicines, and about half were assigned to also get bypass surgery. More than half the patients in each group lived beyond the study's first phase. The 10-year results are a look back at all patients studied. A total of 359 bypass patients died from any cause, or about 59%, compared with 398 medicine-only patients who died, 66%. Deaths from heart disease-related causes totaled 247 in the bypass group, or 41%, versus 297 medicine-only patients, or 49%. A journal editorial published with the study says the latest results solidly support strengthening treatment guidelines to say that bypass surgery is probably beneficial for these patients. The long-term results are very encouraging and confirm what many doctors believed about potential benefits of bypass for those patients, said Dr. Todd Fellman, a cardiologist at North Shore University Health System in Evanston. Fellman was not involved in the study. The National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute paid for the study. And then from the local page, Allison Petty writes on government and politics, council vote could resolve library saga. From Decatur. The long-running question of Decatur Public Library building ownership could end tonight with a Decatur City Council vote. The Council's approval would be the final step to transfer the facility at 130 North Franklin Street to city ownership. The library's Board of Trustees approved the deal on Wednesday. The library would continue to occupy its current space. The city would seek a tenant for unused space on the facility's second floor and potentially in its annex. Assistant City Manager Billy Tyus said the city's goal was to reach an agreement that benefited the library and the taxpayers. "I don't think it's about the monetary gain," he said. "I think it's about trying to make sure that the asset and that space are used in a way that provide the greatest benefit to the community as a whole." The council's approval would resolve a saga that began more than 2 years ago when the library began seeking new ownership for the building. A precarious financial situation had caused library leaders to make cuts to staff and hours. They knew that the building's extensive capital issues, which would only grow with time, were more than their budget could withstand. The city would take over those needs, including the dilapidated parking lot. "We realize there is some work to be done," Tyus said. City manager Tim Gleason realizes there's some work to be done, and we have made a commitment to doing that. An earlier deal would have sold the building to the Decatur Public Building Commission, which would have renovated the unused space and leased it to Macon County offices. But the City Council did not sign off, with council members in particular expressing concern about outstanding city debt related to the library. The city began negotiations to acquire the facility in November. In other business, the council will discuss residency requirements for city workers during a study session. Residents Jim Taylor and Lloyd Holman raised the issue in June, asking the council to require all new hires to live within the city limits. The issue is complicated because residency requirements are defined in union contracts for police, fire, and American Federation of City, Council, and Municipal Employees workers. Also, under its consent calendar, the council will consider a community service option for residents who violate city code. And the sidebar indicates that if you go, the Decatur City Council meets at 5:30 p.m. today in Council Chambers, 3rd floor, Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. And an article by Tony Reed from Decatur. Growing Self-Sufficient, Small Engine Tractor Workshop Teaches Handy Skills. Joe Tenges was born in 1967, and his little Ford Farm tractor was born in 1963. Tenges is still running just fine, but his Ford isn't, since it wouldn't start this year. So he hopped in his car and drove more than 2.5 hours from his home in Frankfort, Missouri, to Decatur's Richland Community College, which hosted an all-day primer Sunday on how to maintain and operate tractors. The course, Small Engines and Tractors Workshop, was put on by a Champaign-based nonprofit organization called the Land Connection. Its mission is to teach students the art and science behind small-scale farming with a syllabus of how-to courses covering everything from machinery to marketing and even beekeeping. Sunday's mechanical instruction was split into a small engines workshop in the morning, followed by small tractor operation and maintenance in the afternoon. It cost $100 for both sessions, or $55 for one, with most of the 12 strong participants opting to do both, such as Tenges. He's a senior network technician in the telecommunications field in his day job, but is also planting an organic, small farm with his wife, who told Tenges he is in charge of communicating with the Ford. He said the instruction he harvested Sunday was worth the trip, and he's got his eye on being a self-sufficient farmer as he lays the groundwork for a profitable retirement income project. I think there is an opportunity for someone like myself who has only 68 acres and most of it woods, he said. And hey, I've got this tractor and I want to learn how to do something with it because I don't want to always be spending $400 on repairs. Jeff Hake, farmer training program manager with the Land Connection, says there is a growing hunger for the knowledge to farm profitably on a small scale. What's driving it all is complicated, he added, but there is a desire to be in charge of your own life. And when you are in charge of your own business, you're in charge of your own income. And there is also a desire to do something that is better for the land and the environment. And also on the local page, an article by Valerie Wells, Herald and Review staff writer from Stonington. Retired Stonington music teacher receives Sondheim Award. John Reed figured out what he wanted to be by first figuring out what he did not want to be. When I graduated high school, I worked as a short order cook in a restaurant, Reed said in a phone interview from his Carlinville home. I knew that's what I didn't want to do. My dad was a teacher in Carlinville, and I always liked band and chorus, so I thought I'd go be a band and chorus teacher. He was such a good one that he's been honored with a Kennedy Center Stephen Sondheim Inspirational Teacher Award. He was nominated by Brenda Clark, associate professor and chair of the music department at the University of Indianapolis, who is an alumna of Stonington Schools. She credited Reed with inspiring her to become a music educator. John Reed is simply an extraordinary person with a zest for life that was evident in everything and everyone he touched, and was the type of role model that every parent wants for their child, she wrote in her nomination. Being a teacher myself, I know how challenging the profession is, especially in a small town, Clark said. In a small community, Clark said, the music teacher might teach beginning band to elementary students, turn around and teach chorus to high school students, while preparing performing groups for a contest all in the same day. Reed did all that, and student groups always made a good showing at those competitions, she said. Reed taught in Stonington and Taylorville for 37 years, and when he retired, moved back to his hometown where several of his 8 brothers and sisters live. He spends a lot of time with family and is even working up a musical number with some of them to perform at a grandson's wedding. His primary instrument was drums, but, as music teachers know, a music education major has to learn enough about all the instruments to be able to instruct children on how to play them. He actually majored in vocal music, thanks to watching a senior percussion recital when he was a freshman. I thought, I don't want to do that in 4 years, he said with one of his ready laughs. I didn't want to be a percussion major. He doesn't play the drums anymore, though he still has drumsticks, he said. He and his wife gave the piano to a relative so her grandchildren could learn to play, and he's been considering buying an electronic keyboard. Music is still an important part of his life. He sings in 2 church choirs. When the Kennedy Center contacted Reed, he thought it was a phone solicitor or scam, and he hung up on them. Once he and his wife went exploring online and discovered that it was all authentic, he felt bad about not believing the caller from New York. It's such a humbling experience and joy to my heart, Reed said. I was just blown away with the whole thing. And the page A3 briefs for today from Decatur. Winds topple tree. Saturday's high winds toppled a tree on the west side that fell across the street and crashed into a house. Firefighters say the large tree, growing in the 2200 block of West Main Street, fell about 5:20 p.m. into the 100 block of South Wooddale Avenue, where its branches punctured the roof of a kitchen and punched a hole in a sunroom of the same home. There were no reports of injuries, but firemen were on hand as a safety precaution because the tree also brought down power lines, which were later dealt with by Ameren, Illinois. Winds gusting close to 60 miles per hour were reported in the area. From Altamont, I-70 accident claims woman. A woman was killed Friday night when the car she was riding collided with a semi-truck. Illinois State Police said Mariah D. Prather, 18, of Springdale, Arkansas, was pronounced dead after her body was cut from the wreckage of the accident on Interstate 70, eastbound, about 7:20 p.m. The driver of the vehicle, Ralph Randall, 49, of Lowell, Arkansas, also was cut free and taken to St. Anthony's Memorial Hospital in Effingham. An update on his condition was not available. Police allege Randall failed to brake in time as traffic slowed for a previous wreck and his vehicle plowed into the trailer of a semi driven by Carlos Gomez, 60, of Grand Prairie, Texas. Gomez and a passenger, Catherine Gomez, 62, of the same address, were not listed as being injured. Randall was cited for failure to reduce speed to avoid an accident. From Decatur, Wiggly Worms Workshop. Children ages 3 to 5 with an adult are invited to learn about worms at Preschool Peepers, Wiggly Worms, at 10 a.m. on Saturday, April 9th, in Rock Springs Nature Center. Children will uncover real worms in dirt, get to them, and create a wiggle worm craft in this free program. Pre-register online by noon Friday, April 8th at www.MaconCountyConservation.org. And from Neoga, Vets Memorial Planned. A groundbreaking ceremony was held Friday on a veterans memorial that will be located in the city's Jennings Park. Later this year, it should be possible to read more than 1,000 names of the people from the Neoga area who have served in the armed forces. About $62,000 was raised for the project. And the meetings calendar. Here is a week's schedule of government meetings and other activities of interest to the public in Decatur and Macon County. Today, April 4th, Argenta Village Board of Trustees at 6 p.m. in the Village Hall at 330 North Warren Street. Blue Mound Village Board at 6 p.m., 317 Railroad Avenue. The Decatur City Council at 5:30 p.m., Council Chambers, 3rd floor, Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Forsyth Village Board of Trustees, 6:30 p.m. at the Village Hall, 301 U.S. 51. Hickory Point Town Board of Trustees at 7:30 p.m., Town Hall, 2240 West Ash Avenue in Decatur. The Illini Park District Board of Trustees at 6 p.m., 265 South Main Street in Warrensburg. Latham Fire Protection District Board of Trustees at 7 p.m., Firehouse, 271 Macon Street. Mount Zion Village Board of Trustees at 5:15 p.m. at the Village Hall, 1400 Mount Zion Parkway. Warrensburg Village Board of Trustees, 7 p.m., 155 East Main Street. On Tuesday, the Decatur Civil Service Commission meets at noon, second floor conference room in the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. The Decatur Firemen's Pension Fund Board of Trustees meets at 3 p.m., Fire Station Number 1, 1415 North Water Street. On Wednesday, the Decatur Park District Board of Commissioners meets at noon, the Administration Building, 620 East Riverside Avenue, and the Decatur Township Board of Trustees meets at 6 p.m., 1620 South Taylorville Road. On Thursday, the Decatur Plan Commission, 3 p.m., Council Chambers, 3rd floor, Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. The Decatur Public Building Commission meets at 9 a.m., room 804, Macon County Office Building at 141 South Main Street in Decatur. And the Decatur Public Library Board of Trustees Personnel Policy and Public Relations Committee meets at 4:30 p.m., 130 North Franklin Street. And finally, there's a photograph of an SUV teetering over the edge of a highway. This is from the Associated Press. This SUV broke through a guardrail and nearly went over a cliff on Malibu Canyon Road in Malibu, California on Saturday. Authorities say the motorist managed to get out of his SUV, but was then struck by a passing bus. Sheriff's officials say the man was conscious and breathing when he was rushed to a hospital following the two crashes. Well, we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for April 4th, 2016. Please stay tuned.